Portland just a minute now before 9 o'clock. Coming up in 1 hour, it is Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Actually, before that, at 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Per Fogering interviews insurance actuary and writer Gail Tverberg on the growing gap between the price that oil exporters require to keep drilling and the price that importers can afford to pay. At 10, it's Air Cascadia. 10:15, you'll hear Flashpoints with guest host Kevin Pina speaking with organizers uniting against military action in Syria, including Medea Benjamin of Code Pink. And Kevin examines the continuing human rights crisis in Egypt. At 11 this morning on Between the Covers, host Lee Ann Krantz welcomes Oregon author and creative writing teacher Stephen Allred to discuss his debut linked short story collection, A Simplified Map of the Real World. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, host Patricia Welch, O.B. Hill, and Emma Jackson Ford speak with Denorja Taylor, who writes science fiction for all ages and all kinds of people. That is all coming up this morning, but stay tuned. Up next, it's Teresa Mitchell hosting Press Watch with news you're not supposed to know. Coming up next on KBOO.
Wednesdays in Portland are a little more festive these days, thanks to creative collaborations and Hump Day PDX. Hump Day PDX is a street festival in Southeast Portland featuring the live music and art exhibits of creative entrepreneurs who are living on the streets. There are also family activities to enjoy, food to eat, and a beer garden for drink, all organized by creative collaborations in support of struggling artists and in an effort to stimulate the local neighborhood economy. The next Hump Day PDX is September 11th from 7 to 10 p.m. at Southeast 9th and Belmont in Portland. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
Also, thanks to a grant from McMenamins, inviting the entire community to the Pearly Gates, the newest dance party in Lola's Room at the Crystal Ballroom, featuring up-tempo disco and soul with a modern twist every Sunday night. More information at McMenamins.com/Lola's.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know, giving you the tools to destroy billionaire rule. Of course, I want to talk about Syria. Headlines first, though. Leaders of 13 Pacific Island countries, acutely vulnerable to rising sea levels, have released a statement calling for urgent action to address climate change. The 12-page document says governments in the region are committed to demonstrating climate leadership and calls on countries to list specific pledges to reduce pollution. The Majuro Declaration, also signed by Australia and New Zealand, will be presented to the UN Secretary General in New York later this month. The responsibility of all to act falls to every government, every company, every organization, every person with the capacity to do so, both individually and collectively, it says. The declaration was issued at this year's Pacific Island Forum meeting in the Marshall Islands capital of Majuro, which was briefly submerged by high tides in June this year. So it's, you know, it's kind of urgent for them. You know, hello, we're underwater, and we were wondering if you could kind of And there's other news. But I kind of want to jump right into a situation with Syria. AIPAC, as you may know, is mobilized and demanding war with Syria. As I reported a couple weeks ago, the USS Boxer is also on its way to the Gulf, adding to the giant war buildup. This is from, 2 weeks ago. The amphibious ready group led by the USS Boxer deployed from Naval Station San Diego to the Middle East, and that includes the 847-foot-long amphibious assault ship USS Boxer and the 610-foot amphibious dock landing ship U.S. Harper's Ferry and the 684-foot amphibious transport dock USS New Orleans, along with 2,400 Marines, a total 4,200 dedicated soldiers and Marines. And the USS San Antonio is already out there, but I'll get to that in a moment. From Al-Manar TV in Lebanon, three Russian warships crossed Turkey's Bosphorus Straits today en route to the eastern Mediterranean near the Syrian coast amid concern in the region over potential U.S.-led strikes. The SSV-201 intelligence ship, Priazovye, accompanied by the two landing ships Minsk and Novocherkassk, passed through the Bosphorus, known as the Istanbul Strait, that separates Asia from Europe. The Priazovye on Sunday started its voyage from the home port in Ukraine to the appointed region of military service in the eastern Mediterranean, according to a military official in Russia. And Russia has kept a constant presence of around four warships in the Mediterranean, eastern Mediterranean, in the Syrian crisis, rotating them every few months. Also has a naval base in the Syrian port of Tartus, whose origins date back to Moscow's close relationship with Damascus under the Soviet Union. Moscow vehemently opposes the U.S.-led plans for military action against Syria over the chemical allegations. Also from Al-Manar, Ayatollah Sayed Ali Khamenei stressed today that the U.S. is committing a mistake regarding the Syrian crisis and that it will face the strike due to its aggression and will pay a price if it attacks the Arab country. In a meeting with the head and members of the Assembly of Experts in Iran, the Ayatollah said that global arrogance seeks to dominate the entire region in line with policies dictated by the Zionist regime. The Americans, he said, are now preparing grounds to attack Syria under the pretext of the Syrian government's alleged use of chemical weapons in a bid to imply that they care about humanity. That's a quote. He said they pretend they care about humanitarian issues, whereas the Guantanamo Bay detention camp, Abu Ghraib prison, their tolerance of Saddam Hussein's use of chemical weapons against the Iraqi Kurds and Iranian cities, their silence on the carnage of innocent people in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iraq, proved otherwise. End of the quote. And speaking for myself, it's interesting, isn't it, how easily the Obama administration plays the press like a violin. It seems easy to see that nerve gas was used against civilians in Syria, though it's obvious that one side, that is those opposing Assad, have everything to gain from its use, and that Assad had nothing to gain from its use. So he is winning the civil war against various groups, including Al-Qaeda, many of which are supported by the U.S., including Al-Qaeda. So all the White House has to do to play their violin is to gloss over the question of the perpetrator of the gas attack and repeat the White House accusations over and over. We hear that no one doubts that nerve gas was used, and then we hear that Assad used it. Well, no proof has been presented for that, and less motive. As we wait for the verdict, it's, you know, another 3 weeks. Gosh, can we wait that long for blowing people up? The sentence is already rendered. War with the collusion of Congress. It gets less reasonable. Congress has the constitutional mandate to declare war. It's very clear in the Constitution. Congress shall declare war. And when they say declare war, when that was written in 1783, you declared war before you made war. And it's clear that when they gave Congress the ability to make war, and pointedly did not give it to the executive, they were preventing, well, wars by kings. And Well, the proposed bombing of Syria via our darling Tomahawk missiles requires the declaration of war from Congress. Anyone can see that. Instead, the executive asserts Congress is merely needed for an optional blessing, and the war is to go forward regardless. So the latest is that subsection of the Senate, now I'm forgetting if it's, I think it's the Council on Foreign Relations, has agreed to go to war. Syria has stated, well, although they don't phrase it that way, Syria has stated repeatedly that it will defend itself, and of course this anticipated defense will result in further justification of an open-ended, unlimited war against Syria and any ally that dares to honor its mutual pacts with Syria. The pretenses that the White House holds up, that the thousands of U.S. troops and dozens of ships and hundreds of aircraft that are there in the region poised and fueled and readied are there merely as a general precaution against who knows what. Those pretenses are believed by no one except perhaps some starry-eyed talking heads here in the U.S. The corporate-owned news announcers are ready for war. Open the veins, open the floodgates, and let the blood flow. I haven't forgotten watching the television in 2003. I had a VCR. And I just put it on record because I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and I just wanted to keep it. I'm pretty sure I still have the videotape because I remember how that look appeared on the talking heads' faces, and I had seen that before on previous bombing campaigns. And you may recall that we, the American people, got to watch as if it were a football game while the United States bombed the crap out of Baghdad. It looked like a thunderstorm over that city. You could see the camera just, you could see what the camera saw. Just pointing at buildings and things blowing up. The Al-Amriya shelter with hundreds of children and women hiding under deep sheaths of steel and concrete was intentionally targeted. Its top blown off and a penetrating missile sent in to make sure that everyone was roasted. And they were roasted. Their fat stuck to the walls, all dead. Oh yeah, wasn't that glorious? And the look on the talking heads' faces, that glaze in their eyes, that Mordlust, it was disgusting. So I kept it. That's on the videotapes. Remember that? Well, we're about to get another serving. Won't that be nice? I invite your comments on war. I don't believe for a minute that the war has been stopped. There's just too much equipment, too much propaganda. They mean it for real this time, and I don't know when they'll start. When they're good and ready, because the victims of the war don't really have the means to forestall it. They can try to defend themselves. The details show that the U.S. has long planned for this war. Obama makes a big show of reluctance, but he cannot be aware of the massive arms buildup. He cannot be unaware of the massive arms buildup in the endless war games. If you have comments, you can call in 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. This preparation for slaughter has been decades in the making and more recently has brought together the Pentagon's personnel and treasure to aim at the Syrians and the Iranians and the Lebanese Hezbollah. There has been special care to ensure that these mice are well cornered. They obligingly bluster and show their outdated and outnumbered weaponry, and they're damned for their desperate courage in the monopoly media. Let them squeak, the generals think. The slaughter will be the sweeter thereby. Here in the U.S., we puff our chests, or we will, and pretend that some great struggle may be afoot. We know the bones of this play. We watched it over and over. Support our troops, they'll say. Well, you know, you had your chance to oppose the war, they'll say. Now we've got to support our troops. Because really, if you really want to dissent, if you really want to exercise democracy, then you've got a problem. You'll be beaten up in the streets, won't you? We know how this play goes. Meanwhile, someone is actually taking steps to stop the madness. This is an excerpt from Franklin Lamb's article in Counterpunch.org today. An international human shield movement is coalescing, according to informed sources in Syria. One initiative is to bring 1,000 Americans and thousands of others to Syria within the next 10 days to guard likely bomb sites, reminding one of the International Solidarity Movement international volunteer efforts in occupied Palestine in order to try to protect homes of Palestinians from government bulldozing. Some redacted specifics have been disclosed to Franklin Lamb, he says, to this observer from an international organizing committee working around the clock on this Human Shield initiative. Some descriptive excerpts: international human shields are planning on coming to Syria in solidarity with the Syrian people and in an effort to send a global message and hopefully deter an American attack next week. Timing: while moves can be made fast and with other key elements in place, time is not in our favor. 10 more days for preparation would be ideal. The Human Shield initiative assumes that it must be done in such a way that very little time lapse from the official announcement of the action to the actual arrival of the human shields on the ground in Syria takes place. The impact: in order to achieve a significant impact, having at least 1,000 Americans and several thousand international human shields deployed in Syria is the objective, with ideally at least one representative from every UN member state. As evidence of the true international community opposing American attack, it can go forward. The U.S. activist-based steering committee is quickly bringing together professionals in IT, marketing, logistical planning, implementation, spokespersons, public relations, accounting, documentarians, and experienced project managers. Ferries from European ports are to be arranged to carry significant numbers of human shields from major European cities. Ideally, several jumbo jets will be chartered to carry human shields from some of the world's major cities, and use of land convoys are under consideration. Your comments, 503-231-8187. Hi, Harvey, you're on the air.
Hi, Teresa. Well, have you ever seen the movie called Wag the Dog?
Well, I've certainly heard of it. I haven't watched it.
Okay. Well, I recommend that to everybody, with Robert De Niro and Dustin Hoffman, Wag the Dog. It's basically about the president, you know, it's a story, but it's about a president getting into trouble, and they bring in people who create this scenario so as to get rid of the problem, to so that it disappears from the minds of the people. And I'm thinking that before this war thing happened, you know, the government has to deal with the NSA crisis. You know, people finally found out that they're being listened to, they're being read, and all kind of misinformation just back and forth. And it made the government, like, really, you know, really, they don't like that sort of thing. Now, what's interesting is that there's a company called Booz Allen that they get majority of their contracts from the government.
What they're about. I mean, since the First World War, they take contracts from the government and do sneaky things.
That's true. They are the PR people. Like, during wars, they're the ones who keep it all clean. In other words, like, if you remember during the Vietnam War, they showed scenes of people being burnt and all the children on fire running down the road. And then there was a massive protest. Well, they learned, don't show any scenes of people, dead people. Just talk about getting the job done, you know, that kind of, like, military talk.
Oh, sure. There was a ban on showing, as you may recall, on showing coffins coming back in.
Exactly. And it's this
during
company,
the Iraq
actually.
War.
That's right. And it's this company that got caught with the NSA. It was like there that Snowden came out of there, and he told everybody, they're listening to you there. And this is a private company. So they are into PR war management. Now, it wouldn't be surprised that to take the heat off of this, you know, this incredible spy ring that's being used against the American people, to take the heat off, well, it's always make a war. And that's what that movie Wag the Dog is.
It's a private government.
It shows how they do it. So I recommend everybody look at the movie Wag the Dog and just get, you know, I think you're going to start to get the feeling that that's what's happening here, that this is a kind of a diversionary tactic to take the mind, take people's minds off the fact that they themselves are being, you know, spied upon.
What do you think of the human shields?
Yeah, yeah. So that's my theory. It's Wag the Dog.
I'm getting that. And that's a good suggestion. What do you think of the human shields?
I don't know. I can't comment on that. I just think war is horrible. It's the most horrible thing we do. It's like when the world catches a cold, and, you know, when you catch a cold, you all these things in your body die, and all you know, the blood cells die and they form mucus. Well, that's what we're doing. Every time the world catches a cold, all these people die. It's a process, just like in the human body. So that's the way I see it. But we can avoid it. We can avoid it. And I say, we got to move away from nuclear, coal, natural gas, and oil, because it seems to be the root of many of our problems. It's this acquisition of energy. We got to plug into the sun, and I say, let's get solar.
Thanks for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Back to the topic of human shields. Coming into Syria, the first objective of the enemies of Syria will be to portray the human shields as nothing more than pawns of President Bashar al-Assad. Does it sound familiar? We've been through this during the bombing of Iraq. And this is precisely what the mainstream media did in 2003, presenting human shields as pawns of Saddam. In order for the human shields to have power, they must be seen as independent supporters of the people of Syria, who represent the will of the vast majority of people around the world who oppose the pending U.S.-led Western attack. The human shields should, however, work with prominent leaders in the civilian sector of Syrian society, and great efforts should be made to produce daily news stories of the human shields and Syrian people working together to protect Syria from the ongoing foreign-instigated aggression. What do you think of that? Go to the next caller. Sherelle, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Teresa. Same old story. Boy, this is all so familiar. And I have to say, I do appreciate how articulate you are, when you were talking about that terrible attack upon those women and children. But in all ways, you are so articulate, and I'm thankful for the information that you bring also. I'm back on that idea of Sick Out Friday. The idea of Sick Out Friday, no war, Sick Out Friday, is people don't show up for work.
Was that coming up tomorrow then?
Yes, and just trying to spread that idea.
Sick Out Friday. Okay, that's something to do. That's even more immediate than a human shield.
Sick of war, yeah. Sick of war, don't show up for work if you can. But if a person can't, if it puts their job in jeopardy or they just can't afford it, then...
I like that, an anti-war strike, a sick out. Call in, hello, I'm feeling sane today and can't come into work.
Well, you know, you have to do it so that you can protect your paycheck, your family, and...
Doctor, it's my eyes. I can't see supporting this war.
But the other thing I was going to say... You're so funny. The other thing I was going to say pertaining to a shopping boycott, it should not be just for one day. It should continue. We do not shop. We buy what we absolutely have to, and otherwise we share, and perhaps KBOO could set up itself as a share coordinator or share center.
Well, now, just like the one day sick out, it's like one day isn't going to change everything, but it's an effective propaganda gesture. And so I like the idea of one day not shopping.
If it's Friday, if it's tomorrow, and nobody shows up for work, if it's possible and they can't, then the vote comes in probably on Monday. At least they have an idea that the American public is aware and is thinking about this. The no shopping just continues, and I mean into Christmas season. And instead of shopping, people share, and that means getting together with your neighbor and saying, I'm bringing over some soup because, you know, we want to keep you from shopping.
Well, is there a website that you can point people to about the Sick Out Friday?
Well, I've just been talking about this idea with other people and other people at KBOO.
Okay, well, now we're talking about it on KBOO, and that'll work.
And if you can spread it further, because you guys know everybody who knows everybody else. But then the idea of no shopping boycott, which would also allow us to go neighbor to neighbor and start sharing meals and sharing clothes and sharing products. But now, the last thing that I want to mention, that I think this is an important consideration, the country is just employing a skeleton crew of retail workers. Everything is made elsewhere, but still those retail workers, their jobs are very important. So if we could put together a fund to try to help support these people financially, because if we stop shopping, there will be layoffs of these people. And but we really want people out of the stores, out of the malls, only at the farmer's market or wherever else they can afford to shop, including Winco. I mean, poor people.
Well, I like this idea. I would suggest that you continue this. I mean, obviously, there's not enough time to make it happen tomorrow just from a notice on KBOO, but why shouldn't we have three-day weekends, no Fridays until the war is canceled? I would love that. And thank you very much for calling in.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Number to call, 503-231-8187. I've been talking about human shields going to Syria, and there's an action plan. There's more on that at counterpunch.org. And the article is by Franklin Lamb, a journalist now in Syria. And he writes, our goal is to personalize the people of Syria and show their suffering through the eyes of the human shields. So more to read on that, and I encourage you to pull up counterpunch.org. I want to give some more details Well, first I want to say you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Press Watch. Coming up at 9:30, Fight the Empire. Topic is peak oil. Oil has everything to do with Syria, by the way. Oh, yes, there's a lot of frackable oil under there. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, organizers uniting against military action in Syria, and an Egyptian journalist reporting on the continuing human rights crisis in Europe. Excuse me, human rights crisis in Egypt. Some details, in case you don't know how big the buildup is. The U.S. Navy has deployed the USS San Antonio. I already mentioned the USS Boxer group, those three giant ships with several attending ships. There are submarines in the Gulf. The USS San Antonio is already there. It's an amphibious transport ship. So this is a massive, massive troop buildup. There's no reason to believe that there will be no boots on the ground because there are so many boots going there right now. The USS San Antonio with several helicopters and hundreds of Marines on board is on station in the eastern Mediterranean but has received no specific tasking, according to a defense official. This is from Mitchell Chusadovsky writing in Global Research. While the USS San Antonio has amphibious landing equipment which can be used to land some 6,000 sailors and Marines, no boots on the ground remains the official motto. So why then has the U.S. and that was deployed months ago. So why then has the U.S. deployed its most advanced amphibious landing ship? The report suggests this is routine and there are no attack plans. They go on and on about that. But there are currently five destroyers off the coast of Syria. The USS Stout, Mayan, Ramage, Berry, and Gravely, not to mention that San Antonio. The destroyers are equipped with Tomahawk cruise missiles, which are ready to fire if Obama gives the order. On 28th of August, the U.S. Navy announced the deployment of the Arleigh Burke-class destroyer, USS Stout, en route to join the four other destroyers. In a not unusual twist, this deployment of U.S. and allied naval forces preceded the chemical weapons attack, which is being blamed on Bashar al-Assad. According to naval records, the guided missile destroyer Stout departed Naval Station Norfolk, Virginia, on August 18th, 2013, for deployment to the U.S. 6th Fleet Area of Responsibility. All kind of vague. This massive naval deployment, which also includes strategic submarines, was ordered prior to the tragic events of August 21st, which begs the question, if the humanitarian weapons attack is a justification for intervening, why was the order to launch an R2P, Responsibility to Protect, stop laughing, humanitarian naval operation against Syria decided on prior to August 21st. Was there advanced knowledge or intelligence regarding the timing and occurrence of the 21st of August chemical weapons attack? He writes, a strike against Syria in the immediate short term is unlikely. Obama announced on August 31st that he would seek formal approval of the U.S. Congress, and we all know about that and how that is going forward. And I was just commenting on it. But he writes, overtly supporting al-Qaeda has become the new normal. When the various pieces of evidence are put together, the picture which emerges is that of a covert false flag operation carried out by the U.S.-sponsored rebels and special forces, intent on blaming President Bashar al-Assad for killing his own people. As mentioned above, naval deployment was decided on before the August 21st chemical weapons attack. The Pentagon has confirmed that the USS Nimitz and its carrier strike group has moved into the Red Sea. Are you keeping count here? And that's how many aircraft carriers is that? If you include the helicopter carriers, the marine amphibious landing ships, the USS Nimitz and its carrier strike group moving in. With the USS Princeton, the USS William P. Lawrence, the USS Stockdale, the USS Shoup, USS Harry S. Truman Aircraft Carrier and Strike Group is in the Northern Arabian Sea. I could go on. There is a massive, massive war buildup, is my point. Stay tuned, because Pear Foggering is up next on KBOO Portland.
Flip a bookmark into your paperback and listen to KBOO for interviews with your favorite fiction and nonfiction writers. Between the Covers airs Thursdays from 11 to 11:30 a.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fograng, and the program is Fight the Empire. And my guest today is Gail Tverberg, also known as Gail the Actuary. She's a long time in the insurance industry, but she's been writing a lot about peak oil and economics. And anyway, she is our guest. Gail Tverberg, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, welcome to KBOO.
Well, thank you. I've been there before, but it's been a little while.
That's right. It has been a while. Well, you've been writing. You keep on writing new articles all the time. And this most recent one, you talk about the oil price gap. So why don't we start out with that?
Yes. Well, I think what the issue is that the price of extracting oil from the ground keeps rising. And that happens because we pull out the cheapest to extract oil first. So what we end up with is more and more expensive oil to pull out of the ground.
Yeah, one way I could think about that.